From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour goes back to 1905, when a piece of racist artwork was put on display on what would become known as Denzel Carousel. That panel would be displayed for 111 years, a fixture at the popular carousel at Ontario Beach Park in Rochester. In 2015, controversy erupted, and last year the panel was taken down. Maybe you recall those discussions, or maybe you've still never seen the racist artwork that we're talking about. Well, that panel is getting a permanent home at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. It has become an educational piece designed to teach this and future generations about the ways that art was used to dehumanize black children. But first, there are a few more public events that will feature the panel. It's become kind of a traveling exhibit as well, and we'll have a discussion this hour about what it all means. And here to tell us more are several people who have been leading those efforts in our community, and they include Howard Eagle, who is a longtime local educator, and he's with the Take It Down Steering Committee. Howard, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Also here is Minister Clifford Florence from the Central Church of Christ. Minister Florence, always nice to see you.
Thank you.
And here is Catherine Morano Santos, who is a Senior Director of Collections and Exhibits at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. Catherine, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Catherine, just real briefly here, make sure I have it right here before we kind of dive into the history. RMSC is making this a permanent exhibit, is that correct?
That's right. It will be a permanent exhibit at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. We expect that it will travel back into the community for a couple of months every year as well.
And here's just a couple of things coming up here. Thursday night and Sunday, I want to let you know about a couple of programs coming up here. This Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m., and Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. So Thursday, 7 to 9, Sunday, 2 to 4 at the Fight Village Community Center. That's at 186 Ward Street. It's an opportunity for these kind of conversations. And Howard, what do you want people to know about what's coming up at those events?
Well, first of all, we want people to know that it will be an opportunity in which they can view the exhibit and see what it's all about. There really is a lot to the exhibit itself. But then we do want to continue the dialogue. I mean, that's what's critical in this process for us, is to do all that we can to help educate the community about racism in its historical form, but also how it's continuing to impact us in our everyday lives. And so this is a part of our ongoing educational process.
And Minister Florence, what do you want the community to know about these events coming up?
Well, certainly we want the community to know it's available to them to come. And also it's an opportunity for us not to just talk, but to put some action behind what needs to change the pernicious nature of racism. And particularly in the city of Rochester, Monroe County, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And we hope that this would stimulate a serious action movement among the people of the community and speaking truth to power.
When we had a conversation on this program in 2015, I took note of several callers who did not at all challenge the racist nature of the art, but wondered, if we take it down, does that remove an educational opportunity? And I think what we're seeing here, and I want to start with Howard on this point, because Howard pushed back on that. Howard's point, as I recall it, was, you know, parents are taking their kids there to play. They're not there for an educational purpose. And then you're consuming and experiencing this racist art without the context. Well, now it is in an educational context. Was this the vision you had for what should be done with this panel?
It absolutely was. You know, we have maintained all along that it was inappropriate for it to be hanging in a public place, and we kind of compared that to the idea of the colored-only, blacks-only signs that used to hang throughout the segregated South and sometimes in the North. And so we had always envisioned more than what some people at the time were talking about a teachable moment. We were saying no, an ongoing educational process, and that this would be one of the tools that we would use in terms of implementing this process. And so that's exactly where we are now. I mean, we have the exhibit as living proof that racism, institutional racism, structural racism, individual racism can be impacted. That's the importance of it. We have it as you know, proof that people can see. But then it becomes only a small part of the ongoing work that we must do, as Minister Florence mentioned, if we're serious about impacting this, I call it tripartite disease, you know, in its individual, institutional, and structural forms. And so we are exactly where we have wanted to be.
And so one of the things I want to do now is let people know, when you see the display, maybe you've seen, we've had pictures on WXXINews.org, and we've got it up there again today so you can see, because you can see the piece of artwork, but it's also surrounded by some panels and some educational sections that say the following. So one of them, the heading is, what is racism? Then there's, what is Piccaninny art and where did it come from? Why was Piccaninny art on a carousel in Rochester, New York? What happened to the carousel panel? Why did it take 111 years to remove the panel, and why is racism still an issue? What needs to be done? And perhaps most importantly, who will do it? And I want to work through those themes this hour, but I also want to ask Catherine if you fear, I don't want to say if you fear, but you know, you may have people who are uncomfortable. I hope this panel makes us uncomfortable about who we are and what we have done, but what do you anticipate happening at the Science Center when this is a permanent display?
Well, that's right, Evan. And, you know, even to this day on our social media accounts, we're getting questions about why is this racist? You know, a lot of people still don't understand the issues. So we're still trying to go through this educational process to make the community aware. In some cases, it will be people's first exposure to these kinds of issues. So I think when the panel comes back to the museum, it will give us an opportunity to reach a different sector of the community who perhaps needs this education more than anyone in our community. So it will really be an opportunity to broadly show people. We get about 365,000 visitors every year. What these conversations are all about, where we need to go as a community in impacting racism.
And if you get complaints, so be it.
Yeah, I mean, I think museums and other institutions have recognized that we really have to take a stand on these deep-seated issues and problems in our society, and the Rochester Museum and Science Center is prepared to do that, and that's part of why we recognized it was very important to partner in this anti-racism initiative.
So, go ahead, Howard.
Yeah, sure, Minister Florence wants to jump in also, but I just wanted to mention a couple of points. One is in terms of the ongoing education, even when it's back at the Museum and Science Center, the community intends to remain involved in that process. So it's not like we're going to bring in some separate people to do this education. Those of us who have been leading it intend to stay involved. That's one point. But something that Catherine mentioned that's very interesting is this, and it's a reality. Once the display is back at the Museum and Science Center, she said that allows us an opportunity to reach a different population, mainly white, middle class, and so forth, right? That same population we want to be able to attract to the community where the display is sitting now. We want them to come to Pike Village. We want them to come to Central Church of Christ. We want them to come to Phyllis Wheatley Library and so forth. So that in the process of building relationships, it's not a one-way kind of thing, that if we can't interact unless we come to East Avenue. That's part of what we're trying to break down. That's part of the racism. That's a result of the racism.
Sure. Yeah. Minister?
Yes. And also, it seems to be pervasive in the sense that on other occasions that are celebrated here in the city, there's no reluctance to stay out late at night in the city. There's no fear of crime. But now when it's time to really talk about something that affects all of us, to come down where the community is, there seems to be some inhibition. And there seems to be some fog in people's mind on why that's necessary. Well, the same argument could be made about other things that we celebrate, and we have no barriers in front of us to be in the city and to enjoy the city and to enjoy urban life. Well, we're talking about racism now. It's a comfortable discussion because everybody is affected by it.
All right, so once again, the event's coming up, and I see the phone ringing. We're going to get to your calls as we go throughout this hour. The event's coming up Thursday from 7 to 9 and Sunday from 2 to 4 at Fight Village Community Center, 186 Ward Street. And so that's, I think Howard is issued, seems to me almost like a challenge. It says if this is the kind of display that you want to take your kids to see and teach them about, and if this, especially for white listeners, is something that you would see at RMSC, maybe also participate, come down to Village Community, to Fight Village Community Center.
Absolutely. So we can view it as a positive challenge, if you will. Absolutely. And we want people to understand there's nothing to fear in terms of coming on Ward Street, coming to Fight Village. There's nothing to fear. It's more safe than many other places in this community that people consider as being safe. So absolutely, we do want to see a broad cross-section, if you will, of the community participating.
All right, and I want to address questions that and comments listeners may have. listeners, again, I'm sort of making the assumption that with this debate that's happened over the last couple of years or the conversation about this piece of racist art, that you've seen it. If you haven't, again, it's easy to find online, and we've got it at WXXINews.org. But, you know, you heard Catherine say you occasionally get comments on social media. I don't understand why it's racist. I don't understand the history. Well, we're going to work into that this hour, just as this educational display does, just as the work that Howard and the Take It Down Steering Committee have pledged to do for the community to make sure we all understand some of the history. Listeners, if you want to call the program with comments or questions, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And I'll start with a call, and that's Jim in Rochester. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, good afternoon. America's original sin was slavery. Now, let's be honest. And it was a 250-year endeavor, plus another 150-year codified in law, Jim Crowism. And the country's been trying to redeem itself. Now, it hasn't quite made it yet, but she's been working on it, okay? And for people to say racism does exist, you don't even know where you live, how the country was started. That's ignorance. You always have to know if this nation going to move forward and become true to its meaning and its codes and live by the Constitution that was created by the so-called founding fathers, then we have to know who we are and where we are at all people. Because this country is unique now. There's been no country in the history of humans on this earth that have the mercantile muscle or the military muscle that this country has been able to put together. Even during the times of the clashes, Rome couldn't do it. The Byzantine Empire couldn't do it. The Persians couldn't do it. It's global. So America does have a unique role, and we'll see how this thing play out over the next 100, 150, 200 years. And I'd like to hear some comments from the audience, from your guests that's
sure.
In your radio studio.
All right, Jim, thank you for the phone call. Howard, you want to start?
Yes, the first comment is, Jim, we hope that you will show up on Thursday and again on Sunday and something else that we haven't mentioned. In terms of what's happening on Thursday and Sunday, that's our educational track. We want to educate about racism. But we have another track. We have an organizing track because we intend to. One of the questions is, who's going to do it? We are. But we need your help, and we need the help of the community. So we hope that you will show up because, obviously, you can help us educate. And so we hope to see you on Thursday, on Sunday. And we meet at the Central Church of Christ, 101 South Plymouth Avenue, every month, the first Saturday of every month. So we do hope to see you. That's the first comment. The only other thing I'll mention is Jim mentioned that the country has been attempting to redeem itself. Well, we take the position that the country has not been trying nearly hard enough. And that's part of the work that we're doing. We want to help the country redeem itself. And so this is not, you know, just symbolic. This is about improving conditions. Concrete conditions.
Minister?
Jim, you have to give us your information because you have to be considered one of the instructors that we would want to have a part of the curriculum planning because you have a good hand on the pulse of the history. And I would like to say that our people need that history as well. So I hope you would find the time to connect with us because we certainly could use your help. And you have set the stage for other callers that we're not here to debate. We're here to look at ways in which we can work together to solve what is hopefully solvable in our lifetime. But we know it's a big, big, big problem. But we want to see something happen in our lifetime.
All right. Next caller, I think, will help set us up as in a conversation about what so-called Pickaninny art is. And so let's get that phone call in, and then we'll kind of work through a little bit of that history. This is Joseph in Rochester next. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi. Yeah, well, my comment was, and I don't know anything about history of Pickaninny art or whatever, but, you know, the people who ride merry-go-round, they're young kids. And looking at that panel, it's such a human situation. You've got one child reacting to the fact that the other child is cornered by this threatening rooster. And, you know, you start layering all of these educational pieces, and you're going to bring kids in, and it's all right-brain stuff, you know. Are they really going to say, wow, people are just people, you know? That's my comment.
So thank you for the comment. There's so much to say about the history, and we hope, again, that people will come and join in our ongoing activities, because we can't teach this history in the time that we have on Mr. Dawson's show. It's an ongoing process. But one thing we say to people about the historical understanding is, look at the display. Look at the people. Look at the children. Have you ever seen a human being who looks like that? It's a dehumanizing image. It comes out of an era in which this kind of projection of African people was acceptable and entertaining. In fact, that's where Mr. Art comes from. There's a name that we should know, Thomas D. Rice, known as Thomas Daddy Rice. The D is not for daddy. I think his middle name is Dartmouth, but he was known as Thomas Daddy Rice. And he's called the father of minstrelsy. This is about minstrel shows and so forth. That beginning in the 1800s, we had actors in this country who traveled not only around the U.S., but other parts of the world, Europe and other parts of the world, performing minstrels. That is, they painted, these were white actors who painted their faces black, painted their lips ruby red, put on buckwheat wigs and bucked their eyes and so forth, and they entertained people. People thought this was funny and you know, a good thing to do, you know, like us today going to a movie. And so that's only scraping the surface in terms of where this comes from. But the idea that this could be hanging on a public site in the 20th century and no one saying anything about it is just obviously unacceptable. So that's just a quick overview. There's so much more to say about this.
And another comment that I wanted to make, part of the beauty of removing the carousel panel from its original context where children play, putting it into a space where people can have sophisticated and reflective dialogue about this particular issue is one benefit to having it in a display that is removed from the original carousel context. But the other benefit is that we can bring other media to bear. And one of the things that we have available as part of the display is the multimedia production, which involves Dr. David Pilgrim from the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia talking about the collections that are available at that museum. And he was really a great pioneer in using racial caricatures and objects that depict racial caricatures for anti-racism education. And one of the points that he makes very effectively in the video that's part of the display is that you would not be able to have sustained Jim Crow segregation if you didn't have the constant threat of violence, for one, and this large body of racial caricatures reinforcing these ideas about African Americans in our society. So when you look at it from that historical context, you see the real meaning of these images.
But the fact that children are in the display, what other nationality of people on the face of the earth allow their children to be depicted in that way? And the fact that you're using it for a place of entertainment where children are being brought, you don't see any other racial group faced with those kind of caricatures. So the insensitivity to black children is very prominent there. And I know that everybody loves their children and should love their children, but we love ours too. And we certainly don't want them, as anybody's children, to be depicted in that way.
Can I also ask Howard a follow-up point on all of this, which is, I mean, I admit, I look at this panel, I cannot see how anyone would not see an overtly racist image here. Mm-hmm. And something that's really ugly and dehumanizing. But setting that aside, let's say for people who looked and said, well, I don't get it. Can you tell me a little bit more again about the intent of so-called Pickaninny art? It wasn't just racist imagery. It was meant to dehumanize, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. No, there's absolutely no doubt about it. Now, something that's interesting that people don't realize is this is not just a matter of white people don't get it. There are black people and other people of color who look at this and say, I don't know what they're upset about. That's because we've been conditioned to accept it as the norm. It is not normal. There's nothing normal about it. This is an example of why we need to do the education. But if we do research around Picayune, I believe, is the root word. I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but it comes from the Portuguese language. Portugal came up with this concept. And even when they coined the term, it meant ugly, disgusting, nasty black children. Even in that, in its original context. The English picked that up later in the 1800s, and not in during a time period that many people think, like during the 1860s and beyond, when we clearly had segregation in the legal sense, but it was earlier than that. People like Jim Rice and others began to do this acting work much earlier than the 1860s, early 1800s. So this is even older historically than many people realize, even than many historians realize. But there's no doubt about it that not one single thing that's a positive aspect. It was meant to dehumanize, to portray young black children as just inhuman. And so there's no argument about that. There's no argument about it at all.
I think Tom in Brighton on the phone wanted to weigh in on when that piece was still up at the Carousel. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I have two comments. One is on the matter of this thing has been up, or it was displayed for, you said, over 100 years.
111 years.
Now, I was at that Carousel only once or twice, but I understand that the location of it made it rather difficult to see for a lot of people. It was kind of up, higher up and in the back, and if you didn't have a direct line of sight to it, you would not have seen it. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's what I've heard or recall hearing. The second point is, it's kind of just a lot. I don't mean to enlarge the issue beyond what you're specifically talking about, but in medieval Europe, on churches, even the large cathedrals like Notre Dame, they sometimes had sculptures, small figurines, kind of gargoyle-type figurines that were explicitly representing Jews in some cases, even sucking on pigs, various parts of their body, including the rear end. And so this kind of dehumanizing of people goes on, you know, much more than we like to admit. I don't mean to distract from what you're talking about, but...
No, I understand.
It's something that's a larger issue in the way people behave toward each other.
Yeah, and it's awful. Thank you, Tom. But I do, Howard, on where it was at the Carousel?
Yeah, it was. If you look at the so-called art that's displayed on the Carousel, it has several levels. And this was at the highest level, and it was somewhat difficult to see and so forth. But we don't care about that. That doesn't matter. It should not have been there in the beginning. And that's what we're trying to get people to understand. What was the mentality during this time period? And by the way, I don't know if we understand what was happening in this nation around in the early 1900s. We had race riots going on. At the same time that this was occurring, somebody felt it was okay to put this in a public place. And so it doesn't matter that it was way up high or hard to see. It should not have been there. There's a mentality that goes along with the idea that it's okay to do this, and it's not okay under any circumstances. I'm not familiar with the examples of how the Jewish people are portrayed in negative ways in Europe, but there's no history that I know of in this nation in which Jewish people are portrayed like that.
Well, that may be a separate conversation. But bottom line is, when we use art to demean and to hurt and to dehumanize, you know, I think we have to be honest about intention and about the possible impacts here. But I know some people. Go ahead, Minister. You want to weigh in? Go ahead.
But that's an excuse, you know, to talk about what positioning the art was on the Carousel. There's some things that's wide open. If you want to be abstract with poverty and with jobs, fair housing, you know, the redlining that is going on just in the public square against African American people and Hispanic people. You don't need to try to find a panel on the top of a Carousel. Let's look in the public square. And there's monies that have come into this community that was publicly known by those of power. And how is it that Hispanic and black people couldn't benefit from that? And then white people didn't cry out for these communities and say, no, we're not going to take this money for ourselves. We're going to serve the neighborhoods and the block clubs. and all of the people who need the jobs and need better housing and need money in their pockets. So let's compare that, wherever that panel is up there, let's compare that with being the 10th richest city in the United States, where 100% of our children live in concentrated poverty every day, first to Detroit, Dayton, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, Hartford, Connecticut. That panel fell down right on Main Street. So if you have a problem with the panel, let's talk about that in relationship to the panel, and then bring about the question of, is it racism that we can't see that, but we have a hard time trying to figure out, was the panel up high where my kids can see it? What I just talked about, everybody in the state, the county, and the city knows what's going on with racism on that.
So this is important. This is very important because I can just see some listeners saying, well, I don't understand what he's talking about. How is it related? It's the, again, it's the same mentality that allowed that disgusting panel to be placed at the carousel and left there for 111 years. That's the same mentality that allows for the conditions that you just heard Minister Ford speaking to. That's what we need to understand. That's part of the education that we want people to understand. You got to put this all in historical perspective. And then if you actually follow the history, you can see how it unfolded and how we got to the current condition.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, just one other point. You know, I think that all groups have probably been caricatured throughout history in America and probably every other nation in the world. But in America, historically, no other group has been as caricatured as African Americans. And if we think about modern cultural sensitivities, if a cartoon, let's say, of a Jewish person, an Italian person, were posted somewhere publicly that was derogatory and inflammatory, people would be very, very upset about that. It probably wouldn't take 110 years for people to A, become aware, and B, kind of rise up in order to get that removed. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, it is something that's obviously, its time is due for us to be confronting these issues. In fact, it's overdue.
As Catherine was speaking, Ms. Sandra Frankel, the former supervisor of Brighton, just popped in my head because she weighed in on this issue. And we've seen her at a few meetings, and we hope she continues to come and participate. But she weighed in on this issue. And I believe she's Jewish, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
She said, listen, if this was something negative about, if it was a swastika, she said, or something to that effect, the community would have been up in arms. This would have been dealt with. The same point that Catherine was just making. So.
And then why have we tolerated for so long? Well, our next caller, Keith, you know, has a perspective on wanting to make sure we don't forget this stuff ever existed. But, Keith, are you saying they shouldn't have taken it down because eventually people will deny this ever happened?
Evan, I'm going to go against the way the general public is going. I think they should keep all of this stuff up with plaques explaining it, because you will get people, whether it be 5 years, 50 years, 150 years from now, we'll start denying that it ever existed. You have Holocaust deniers now, and I believe that's why the German government never bulldozed the concentration camp, or at least Auschwitz. I don't know if they did all of them or what. But once you start eliminating it, then it gives people the reason to say, it never existed.
Now,
true.
Now, but Keith, before I let the panelists jump in, just let me kind of challenge you a little bit on that point, because I think your heart's obviously in the right place. You don't want people to ever forget that this happened. We know erasure is real in this country. We don't want that to happen. But, you know, Keith, if it was a Confederate flag panel up at the Denzel Carousel, given everything, well, maybe that would have stayed up longer than I realized, but eventually it would have been down, and it wouldn't have been controversial, as controversial as it would have been, say, 10 years ago, certainly 50 years ago. And this is just as derogatory, but nobody's saying burn every Confederate flag and pretend it never existed. They're saying we need to know, history needs to know. Nobody's eliminating this panel. This panel has a permanent home at RMSC, and it is there with an educational context. Is that better?
But you're taking it out of the context. I mean, you can't, you're right, you can go to the museum, you can see the pictures, but I think society should have the ability to go and see the park-like setting where families would congregate. It's a carousel. I remember when you used to go there and grab the ring. And
all that, once you will take it out of the context, I think it cheapens the racism of it, that it was on a carousel. You can say it, but I would rather have people see it. I would rather have people see if it was a Nazi flag, a Confederate flag, anything that would be considered racist to any group of people. Are there any internment camps that were constructed for the Japanese left over? I don't know that. I think there should have been one just to show the errors in America's ways. And I think when you eliminate all of this, you lay the seed for the people who will claim that it never happened, because you have that right now with Holocaust deniers. Hmm. Oh, no, it never happened.
These are very interesting comments. With all due respect, there's some confusion displayed in what you said. You're right. It is being taken out of context. The context in which it was placed at the carousel is a racist context, and so we want it out of that context. The operative term in all that you said is eliminate. There is no intention of eliminating. In fact, if we want to use a word to describe what we're trying to do, it's more like illuminating. And people are not going to see a picture. They're going to see the actual Piccaninny art panel that was hanging at the carousel. Hopefully you'll come and see the display. I think that you'll be impressed. It's not a picture. It's what was hanging there. And it's not going anywhere. We're going to make certain of that. And we're going to use it to educate deeper about racism and how it functions and how it continues to function and so forth. I wish we had more time that we could talk about some of those comments that you just made. There's a lot in what you said in terms of our confusion around how racism works, how it functions in this society. But thank you for your comment. Come and see the display. Let's talk some more.
But there's a danger in it also, because we spoke to people who were in power and who were decision makers for the carousel, and they shared the same view until they were educated at Fight Village, where we're hosting the Piccaninny Art. There were some, and I won't name them, but they were saying that, you know, I don't understand why it should be so offensive. And this is one of our prominent leaders in government here. And there were several of them, and they were in a fog. They wanted to leave it up there, put a plaque there. And now what do we have? We don't have anything up there. And now they just have a covering over it. And we wanted to get a figure back up there that's in the context of African-American history, not children up there. But you notice the carousel is still turning. Nothing is up there, but people know something was up there. What was up there? The Piccaninny Art that's going to be at Ward Street. So come on, let's be honest about this, because the comfortability to be able to close our eyes to the fact that many of us in this community have a better history of that carousel and where it sat. And you might even know the people who were responsible to put it up there. They've remained nameless over 111 years, but everybody else who have done something as terrible as this, eventually their names come out. So how is it that this community for 111 years can hide their identity? Nobody knows whose it is. You know, a phantom came one day and just put that plaque up there in the dark with no flashlight and frame it in and let it stay there and tell everybody, I'm leaving now, but don't tell that I took my time to put that plaque up there and now I'm anonymous. Come on.
Yeah, this is very important, because one thing we know for sure, we've been attempting to emphasize, we want people to think, we're talking about a public place. The beach is a public place. And so this could not have happened without government involvement. We need to understand that. That's a critical point. I want to just mention something else. We've mentioned Fight Village a number of times, which is where the display is now. But what happened at Fight Village in terms of our 8-month struggle to get this taken down is critical. So I want to acknowledge a man who really helped us turn the tide, and that is Minister Franklin D. Florence Sr. He convened, and Minister Clifford Florence, sitting here in the studio with us, doesn't want to mention names, but I will. I think it's important for us to do that. Minister Franklin Florence Sr. brought the mayor together, brought Maggie Brooks and brought Loretta Scott and their staffs together at Fight Village and said to them straight to their faces, this cannot stand. It must come down. That was very helpful to us because Minister Florence is a man who nobody in our community doubts his credibility in terms of authenticity as it relates to civil rights, human rights struggles. And so he helped us do that, and we need to acknowledge that he did. But Maggie Brooks was one of the people sitting in the meeting. And you know, see, this is showing us how deep this situation is. And she said to us straight-faced, honestly, I don't understand what's wrong with this. Can you explain it? And we spent at least an hour going through this history.
Oh, yes, we did.
And then she said, she kind of indicated that now I get it, but in the end, she still left office saying, let's put a plaque up. So what is that? I mean, I won't name it. Let the listeners name it.
And Keith, as I go to our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, we got a bunch more phone calls here. And if you can't get through this hour on the phone, we're going to take more calls, but you can come out Thursday night and then Sunday afternoon, Thursday 7 to 9, Sunday 2 to 4, at the Fight Village Community Center. That's 186 Ward Street. You can see this display from the Take It Down Organizing Against Racism Committee. You can see the piece of so-called Pickaninny art that we're talking about, and you can understand the historical context. But I would just say to Keith, two other quick points here. What I'm hearing from Howard Eagle and Minister Florence is, if you were to leave it there at the carousel with just a plaque, when it was there for 111 years, it's doing damage. It is spreading a racist image. And yes, a little plaque, but who is taking their kids out to a carousel to read plaques? That's not what's going to happen. So when it stays in its original environment, it continues to do the damage. When it goes to RMSC, when it goes to this traveling exhibit, then it gets the context and it removes that power to hurt anymore. And hopefully it becomes a tool to educate and prevent that kind of damage. That's one thing. And then you're right, Keith. There are Holocaust deniers. They're largely lampooned, thank goodness. And I know that in some parts of the world they still have some power. But that is not something that's given any currency or credibility. And I hope that someday no one can say with any credibility that the Confederate flag wasn't actually a flag. And I think people like Howard Eagle, Minister Florence, RMSC, they're making sure we don't go there, but we're doing it in education.
And can I say this real quickly, that the history is twisted for black people. And the sad part about the plaque imagery is that these diabolical things that were done to other races are corrected in all the history books. Every nationality has to drink that water and accept that history, even if it is erroneous in terms of how our history is being told. So one of the things that plaque image does, it goes against the movement of educating. Many of our people are being miseducated of all ethnicities, including our own children, as it relates to our own history. So a plaque will not touch the deep-seated spirit that needs to be touched when you see evil. You know, I love the word of God where Joseph said, he told his own family, what you did, you meant it for evil. That depiction of Pickaninny art was meant for evil. And so you cannot deny by putting a plaque up there that this plaque will explain the evil and the damage and the psychological and emotional damage that it does to children who would have to look at that day in and day out. And while you grab the ring, it ought to grab you and say that that's evil, that's wrong, and it needs to be publicly denounced. And wouldn't it be great if through this process that all of us could come together one time and say that this is evil? And if we can see evil one time, I think we can see it multiple times. And I hope that's what the educational process really does, because this community is in denial about racism and the evil that it does in this community, the city, the county, the state. We see it across the country and around the world. Let's get out of denial and face it. And if we can face it, I believe we can fix it.
All right, we got to get our only break of the hour, and we'll come right back. You're hearing Minister Clifford Florence from Central Church of Christ. Catherine Morano-Santos is here from the Rochester Museum and Science Center, which is making a permanent home for controversial panel, I would say controversial, it's a racist panel that was the Denzel Carousel at Ontario Beach Park for 111 years. Howard Eagle is a longtime local educator, and he's with the Take It Down Steering Committee that is spearheading so much of this work to help educate the community. So let's get our only break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the history and the future of the Erie Canal. If we were starting from scratch, would we build the canal today? What would its role be? You probably saw those big beer fermentation tanks shipped along the canal, but what about future operations? What should the future of the canal be? Recreationally, commercially, and more. History and future of the canal, next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're on the phones, we're going to come back to you before the end of the hour in just a moment. I know Howard Eagle wanted to stress a point that we just heard and kind of emphasize something here. And for me, in our short break when we were talking about education, in my mind, I remembered growing up in a wealthier upper-middle-class suburb in the Cleveland area. No one ever taught me what redlining was. That never came up. I had to learn about that in adulthood, try to figure out what it meant and understand, you know, everyone's role in it and understand how to try to get your head around all the wrongs that have been done for so long without any education in schooling of that. And I think about what they said about the former county executive, and she's not here, and I would just say to Maggie Brooks, if you're listening, call anytime and we'll talk about this, because I would love to know about how this kind of education impacted you when you say, well, I've never seen art like this. Tell me about this. I don't know. Can we do more in educational settings, Howard?
Well, I hope that the listeners are really paying close attention in terms of the last point that Minister Florence made. Part of what he said is, in a sense, an indictment of the public and private educational system, which is where much of the work that we're attempting to do should be occurring. Right? I mean, there are still young people who can make the very same statement you just made. And some of them didn't grow up in affluent suburban neighborhoods. They grew up right here in urban areas and could make the same statement that I never heard of redlining in Brighton, where black people couldn't move to in the early 20th century. That I never heard that. I didn't know that. That should not be the case. How could that not be a part of local history? How can the work that we're currently doing in terms of what happened with the Picanini art panel at Shalott and so forth, and the history that Minister Florence mentioned earlier about, we still don't know how that got there. So why wouldn't that be a part of local history? And the role that a sage, a man that many of us call a sage in this community, played in getting that down. Why wouldn't that be part of the local history? Why wouldn't our children know who Minister Franklin D. Florence Sr. is as part of local history? So this is part of the work that we're trying to do, is if we have to push the educational system to become more appropriate. I mean, people, there's been talk for decades about what needs to change in terms of curricula and so forth, and who needs to be teaching how. But it's time now. It's way beyond time for us to see some concrete changes and improvement in terms of really combating miseducation.
I think our next caller will expand the point that Howard and the minister were just making here. This is Josh in Rochester, who's wondering if the suburbs are going to get a chance to experience this. And go ahead, Josh.
Oh, thank you, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As a Jewish person, I know words hurt and images can hurt. And I don't think, you know, I really applaud what your guests are doing, because I don't think any African-American family, especially an African-American childhood, go to the carousel and have some possibility that they're going to see that artwork and it's going to have a negative effect on them. But my question is, in your educational efforts, are you going to be going out to the suburbs as well? And the reason I ask that is I really think that in Monroe County, or maybe surrounding, there are probably a lot of people who still think that maybe African-Americans are disproportionately poor, maybe because they don't work hard or they're not intelligent or something like that. And I think it's very important that people see that the real reason is because of this institutional racism that was so accepted by such a big part of society for a long time. So I'm wondering, is the effort going to be to bring it out to the broader community out in the suburbs as well?
Josh, thank you. I don't know anybody in this community who speaks about what racism is beyond personal racism more than Howard Eagle. He stresses this point. Too often, racism is, we talk about, like, it's just personal racism, as opposed to structural, individual, institutional.
That's Yes.
And that's what Josh is talking about there. So are the suburbs going to have a chance here? Catherine?
Well, I think we all agree that people in the suburbs certainly need to see this display. They need to participate in the ongoing conversations that it's engendering in our community. The display is actually owned by the city of Rochester, as is the carousel panel. So it's probably not likely that it will go to locations in the suburbs, at least not anytime soon. But we're really encouraging people to see the display in the city. We're moving it throughout the different quadrants of the city so that
the suburbs can give you a call, can't they? I mean,
you'll
think about that.
Certainly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can explore that possibility, but we really, again, are encouraging people to come together to build bridges. Why can't people from the suburbs come to the city where the exhibit is? They can come to the RMSC when it's residing there long term. So there are a lot of opportunities for people to see the display.
Yes, that's critical. Josh, that's critical. We hope to see you on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. At 186 Ward Street. And then if you can't make it on Thursday, maybe you can make it on Sunday. We'll be at the same place, 2 to 4. We need to see, you don't have to wait for it to come to the suburbs. All right, I mean, part of what this work is to try to build relationships. But I said earlier, and I'll repeat, it can't be a one-way kind of thing that I can't build a relationship with you unless I come to Brighton or Penfield or Webster or wherever it is. No, we want you to come to our community, to what we sometimes refer to as the hood. We want to see you here. And let me just say this, Josh. You said a lot. You said that there was this idea, belief system, widespread belief system, for a long time was accepted in terms of why more African American people and other people of color can't make more progress. You said it was accepted, Josh. It is accepted. It still is, and that's part of the work that we're trying to do is dispel these myths and negative racist stereotypes.
And I think it's important, Monroe County and Rochester, that we're in a season of all kind of festivals and activities. And when it comes to economic prosperity, there's no misunderstanding about racism when it comes to making money in this community. These activities generate money, but who does it generate money for? Again, if you don't want to see the carousel, you watch what happens to the segregation of planning of festivals and activities in the city of Rochester, County of Monroe, where racism draws lines between communities on who can go where and spend where. My money spends anywhere I want to spend it. But the fact of the matter is we have no problem when a certain part of this community wants to make their money at the expense of poor people. And so here again, our caller has to be a supporter, and you have to be a public supporter by coming down to the exhibit, because you have to use your influence contextually. And contextually means come to my community. Don't build barriers between us where there should be none. This is an opportunity, and this is a chance where everybody can get involved. Let's not let fear keep us from doing right.
I want to get one more quick phone call, and we've had so many. Kate and Rush. Go ahead, Kate. Got to keep it tight.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Try to keep it tight, Kate. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call. I want to say thank you to the gentleman for really giving me a little bit of education on the subject, because when I went to the carousel, and I've always lived in Rochester, I was born here, and saw that little painting, I always just thought it was a cute little painting of a couple little black children. I never realized that there was a word as Piccaninny. I'm of German descent, and I would be offended if my neighbors put up swastikas. And I live in the north, and my family's always lived in the north, and I don't really like people who put up Confederate flags. So I don't know if that's a really good comparison, but I just wanted to thank them for the education on it, because I wouldn't have realized that it was offensive to them if they hadn't, come on the radio and educated me.
Kate, you're very welcome, and we hope to see you Thursday evening at 7 o'clock p.m. at 186 Ward Street, and or on Sunday, same location, at 2 o'clock p.m. And in terms of a comparison, Well, one thing, it's so interesting that...
About 30 seconds, Howard, go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting, you thought it was a cute little painting. Many people thought that, right? But again, I asked people to look at it and tell me if you've ever seen a human being who looks like that. But a comparison is, we wouldn't leave those signs that used to hang that said colored only, whites only, we wouldn't leave those up. And so why would we leave something that's like this is much worse? Why would we leave it hanging?
Well, you see it's some of the results, though. Someone like Kate saying, look, I'll raise my hand and say, I didn't know until you came here to educate me. And that's what Howard, Minister Florence, the steering committee, RMSE is trying to do. Lux on Twitter says, I think what your previous caller, Keith, was missing is that removing the panel itself is an act of public empowerment. Carolyn writes, great conversation. Where will the exhibit be before it goes to RMSC? So you heard 7 to 9 and 2 to 4. Thursday night, 7 to 9. Sunday afternoon, 2 to 4 at the Fight Village Community Center. That's 186 Ward Street. And then it's on display at RMSC starting when?
In March of 2018, but it will be at Fight Village Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 until August 31st.
All right, so there you go. So you have multiple opportunities. Howard, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Minister Florence, always good to see you, sir. Thank you so much. And thank you, Catherine. All right, more connections coming up next.